Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 14, 2018. A freed prisoner says he has seen SPLM-IO detainees Samuel Dong and Agri Idri at National Security Headquarters.
Idri and Dong were in the National Security in the Blue House. I did not see Dong. He was kept downstairs. I did see Agri Idri. And they were taken away one day, if I remember correctly, on the 27th of January last year. And up to date, we've not heard or seen anything about them.
And a doctor at Juba Teaching Hospital says many South Sudanese suffering from diabetes come for help at the latest stages.
Even those who died, they don't know that they died of diabetes because there is no awareness of this. And even the illiterate who are living in the town, now they go to the doctors, somebody is told there is diabetes, they become aware of it. But those in the village, they don't know, and even don't wonder what is diabetes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The retired South African military officer recently freed from prison in South Sudan says he has seen Agri Idri, a senior member of the Rebel Sudan People's Liberation in opposition, at the National Security Headquarters in Juba. Colonel William John Anley says Idri and Samuel Dong, who were kidnapped in Nairobi by men believed to be South Sudan government operatives, were brought to the Blue House last year. Anley says Idri and Dong were moved to unknown location later on January 27, 2017. He says the plight of other detainees in the Blue House still haunts him.
So after 2 years and 2 months in confinement, it's really a pleasure to be able to walk outside, drink a cold beer, and to enjoy the amenities back home in South Africa, running water, hot water, good food. So I'm very thankful and very, very grateful at the same time.
You are having these feelings in the backdrop of your experience where you saw other people who were living in a very deplorable conditions in South Sudan. And if there's any memory that comes to your mind at this point, what is that memory?
The memories I have are not always very pleasant and very good. But the memories of lying on a floor, very, very ill, close to death, thinking of how many of my friends are still going through those circumstances, you know, the cramped conditions, very limited food, almost no medical treatment. So, yes, I'm very lucky, but my thoughts and my prayers still go to my friends there in detention, in the Juba Central Prison, and unfortunately we still have some people unaccounted for, so I have not forgotten them.
Let's talk about these people who are unaccounted for. A clear case here is of Agri Idri and Samuel Dong, who were abducted from Nairobi, and the government of Kenya is saying they don't know what happened, they don't know where these people are. The government of South Sudan is saying, well, you cannot blame us for what happened in Kenya. Did you hear any stories about these people, these two individuals? Did you hear any stories about their presence in Juba?
John, the minute you remove people from other countries, people forget you have logistics involved. You have to put people on aeroplanes, you have to transport them to prisons, and you have to move them around so people see what is happening. Audrey and Dong were in the National Security in the Blue House. I did not see Dong. He was kept downstairs. I did see Audrey Igri. And they were taken away one day, if I remember correctly, on the 27th of January last year. And up to date, we have not heard or seen anything about them.
So you're telling me that you saw Agri Idri at the Blue House in Juba?
Correct. That is correct. Other people saw Dong, but as I say, I did not see him. And then one day, they were only there for about 2 days, and then I heard they'd been taken away. People saw them being removed.
Let's talk about life at the Blue House here again. I remember you last time told me you were kept in an office separate from the other detainees. But is that a common occurrence at the Blue House where people are brought in and then taken out?
Yes. You see, many times, John, people would be brought in for questioning, some of them for very, very small cases or minor cases, and they would be released. And mostly these were, I won't say common or criminals, but lesser crimes and lesser focus. it's someone like Audrey Igwe and Don were very, very well known. So the minute they were brought there, their presence was known and seen by not only myself, but by many other people within the detention. But it was not uncommon for people to be taken away, and we were never sure if they'd been released, transferred, or whatever happened to them.
These are people, you know them on a personal level because of your involvement with Dr. Riek Machar and his senior officials. When you saw Agri Idri at the Blue House, did you talk to him or was it a meeting?
No, I was still in that office area, but at that point in time, people had almost forgotten about me. But I know some of my fellow detainees did speak to them. You know, he was locked up in what is known as Zanzan, solitary confinement cells up top there, the same way James Gadet was held. And people did speak to them, even though no one was allowed to. You know, people need to wash clothes, people need help, and people like to know who people are. And Audrey was very well known. Dong was kept downstairs, not with the other political prisoners. So I'm not sure who spoke to him, but people definitely spoke to Audrey upstairs. I did not speak to him.
The government of South Sudan has been on record saying they don't know where Dong and Agri are. And now you're saying that you saw Agri at the Blue House. Someone in Juba will just say you're just trying to tarnish the image of the government.
John, that is not, you know, the opposite is true. We're in the middle of starting a very, very positive peace process, but I think the truth has to come out. People should know what has happened, if they are, where they are, or what has happened to them. I think it's only just, not only for people like me who have, you know, been accused of meddling in the affairs of South Sudan, but for the families, and for people like me who I regard some of them as my friends. So I think it's time that people stood up and said, this is what's happened, or this is what has not happened. But I think, you know, if we go into a process where everybody has to be honest, and we have to face the truth needs to come out.
That's Colonel William Enley, a retired South African military officer, sentenced to death in South Sudan and was released by a presidential pardon 2 weeks ago. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg, South Africa, earlier today. The UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Agency, known as UNESCO, says 59% of youth in South Sudan are unemployed. A new report released by UNESCO says technical and vocational training will help reduce the high rate of unemployment among South Sudanese youth. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
UNESCO East Africa Regional Director Anne Tracer says more than 70% of South Sudan's population is made up of people who are 30 years old or younger.
It gives us a sense of hope, but only if we explore and exploit this youthful population. Many young people in South Sudan feel disenchanted, or if put differently, disengaged due to lack of opportunities and productive engagement. It is vital to engage young people, given the size of the population, to turn around their numbers into dividends for growth and development, and not allow it to be a source of chaos and conflict, including intercommunal conflict.
According to UNESCO survey, 59% of youth in South Sudan, including those with high qualifications from universities, are unemployed. Tracer says the solution is to equip South Sudanese with skills that can help them become self-employed.
Let's bring in the angle of entrepreneurship. In other words, we are calling for the vocationalization of our education system. It is not sufficient to just bring the young people from, you know, early childhood right up to higher education and continue with the traditional mode of delivery of education. What is education? Education is the ability to really fend for yourself.
Lawrence Finaga, counselor and head of cooperation at the Norwegian Embassy in South Sudan, who was also speaking at the launch of the labor market assessment, says engaging youth is the only way South Sudan can solve its economic crisis and security situation.
Technical and vocational education and training is so important because it offers young people a concrete and meaningful tool to manage their life and to contribute to the development and stability of the country. And without engaging them in productive activity, South Sudan will neither be able to improve the economy nor to stabilize the country. Oil resources might be a blessing, provided they are used responsibly and for the good of the whole country. But the real capital of any country is the human capital put to use for development.
Some unemployed youth in Juba say they want vocational skills. Aleu John, who graduated from the University of Juba 3 years ago, says he has remained jobless since then.
It's not easy to get a job. Vocational training can be back up to whatever I'm doing. So it is good to have vocational training so that it adds to whatever you have already. It means getting a job easily. It means part of empowerment. It means many things. It means a lot.
John says many South Sudanese youth like him have been ignored. He says after being jobless for 3 years, he understands that for one to survive in South Sudan, you have got to change your career plans. Baba Medan Konyi, South Sudan's deputy labor minister, says the 5 years of war blocked government strategies to invest in youth. Konyi is calling on development partners to help empowering the youth of South Sudan.
The young people in the Republic of South Sudan, they are doing nothing. They are staying just idle without doing any things to them. Why? One of the reasons, it is a war. Two, because they don't have opportunities to deliver. Some of them, they have finished universities, but there is no chance for them to come and deliver. So, as a Minister of Labor, we are going to support this project so that the young people can be engaged.
UNESCO chief Teresa says employing youth also helps them stay away from intertribal conflicts which have plagued part of the country for years. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
The mayor of Bor Town has apologized to lawyers in the area for calling them crooks while addressing a church congregation last month. Lawyers who were offended by the mayor's remarks asked Guy to apologize, but he refused to do so. Deng Guy Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
After refusing to take back his word for weeks, Bor Municipality Mayor James Guy now says he is sorry for having referred to lawyers in Bor as criminals and incompetent during a Sunday church service at St. Andrew's Cathedral on October 21st. Last week, the lawyers filed a lawsuit against Guy for defamation of character. Speaking by phone from Juba, Guy confirms he apologized to Bor lawyers last Sunday in the same place where he made the disparaging remarks.
I went to the church on Sunday and I apologized to the lawyers. We have reached consensus after some discussion with them. I told the people in the church on Sunday that the right of lawyers should be respected. It was the word criminal that I used. They were actually seriously complaining.
Guy is asking for lawyers to forgive him and to withdraw the criminal case they filed against him.
Then we look a new chapter because they are under.
Let us open a new chapter. The lawyers are operating now within the territory of Bor Municipality Council and we should cooperate. They can continue with their activities. And if I was mistaken, then this simply that I should be forgiven.
Bor lawyer Mamer Deng Aler welcomes the mayor's change of heart.
Then we went in, we talked with the mayor, and the mayor gave his apology to us. And he said that I'm apologized for whatever mistakes I have done in the church. He went to the church, and he said that I'm apologizing for whatever mistakes I have done to the lawyers. So in that juncture, we have forgiven him because apology is one of the remedies.
Aler says the lawyers have agreed to withdraw their suit against Guy since he has publicly apologized for his remarks, which he says tarnished the image of area lawyers.
The charges, first of all, it was defamation, incitement, and threatening. Because, you know, most of the people who were in the church, I can call them, they are in light community. when you go to the church and want to tarnish the reputation of somebody else in the church, then that one is incitement. And it is also threatened. If they were not aware of the works we are doing here, we would have been beaten on the road.
Mahmer says any citizen of South Sudan has a right to sue an individual, including a government official, if they defame their character or reputation. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at diabetes in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is preventing you from reaching your goals?
What is preventing me? Of course, my earning. You know, money does everything, most of the things. Not everything, but most of the things. My earning has not yet sustained me to earn my achievements. But I know with time, as I do other side incomes, I'll achieve.
I find my time so scarce, so limited, to accomplish my plans over that day. And secondly, money. Everything rotates around money.
Jobs are scarce. Like, I'm working, but this is not the best thing I'm supposed to do. Because I have my papers, but I'm not using them. I've moved around trying to look for jobs up and down, looking through newspapers. I applied for something, but still, I'm not yet called on.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Today is World Diabetes Day, and in South Sudan, health workers say they are struggling to manage the disease. Doctors at Juba Teaching Hospital say they cannot count on a steady supply of drugs like insulin at the hospital. Onen Walter Solomon files this report for VOA from Juba.
58-year-old Cosmas Juma receives treatment for diabetes at the Chinese-owned Freedom International Hospital in Juba. Juma uses crutches to walk barefoot on his right leg, while his left leg is bandaged because it is septic, a wound caused by the diabetes. Juma, who works as a librarian at the University of Juba, says he did not know he was diabetic until last month when a doctor at the Freedom Hospital ran a battery of tests on him, which confirmed he has diabetes.
I just realized that something was eating my food. It was itching. I was feeling body weakness. I did not go for examination because I never knew it was diabetes. My body weight started reducing gradually. I had no energy. On October 13 last month, I hardly had energy in my body.
Juma says he sought treatment at the Freedom Hospital because he did not think Juba Teaching Hospital would have the required drugs. But even at Freedom Hospital, no drugs were available, so a doctor directed him to a private pharmacy to buy the medicine. He says his brother bought his first dose of insulin at a cost of 3,500 South Sudanese pounds, which lasts for 10 days. He says he does not know if he will have the money needed to buy his next dose. But for now, Juma has learned how to administer an insulin injection and which foods to avoid.
The doctors have been trained me here in the hospital for 2 days. If there's no doctor or there's nobody, let me inject myself. Some people then I advise him let eat the greens, fish, tomatoes, something with the sugar. Let him not to eat.
Dr. Elijah Maluklueth, a diabetes expert at Juba Teaching Hospital, says there are no statistics on the number of people suffering from diabetes in South Sudan, but he believes the number is high.
Probably, maybe in a week, you may receive 1 to 3 cases. Because most of these patients, they like to go to the private hospitals where they get their own comfort because of the lack of comfortable places ready for admission in the hospital here.
Dr. Lewis says Juba Teaching Hospital lacks the facilities needed to store diabetes drugs.
Insulin is, sometimes it is available, sometimes it is not there. The patient will be given the prescription to bring his own insulin from the market, go and buy, and then they store it locally here. But there is a storage problem. So they are asked to store their own insulin in their own ways because the power is not regular in the hospital. Sometimes it is not there.
Although no one is keeping records on how many South Sudanese suffer from diabetes, Private clinics indicate the number is significant. Records at Oromo Clinic, a private health facility in Juba, show that the clinic received at least 23 cases of the diabetic patients, including children, in the past week alone. And records at Freedom International Hospital show the facility received more than 10 patients in the past week. Lueth says poor lifestyles, including eating fatty, sugary food, and a lack of exercise, is the leading cause of diabetes in South Sudan. He says most South Sudanese suffering from the disease don't even know they have it.
Even those who died, they don't know that they died of diabetes because there is no awareness of this. And even the illiterate who are living in the town, now they go to the doctors, somebody is told there is diabetes, they become aware of it. But those in the village, they don't know and even don't bother what is diabetes. Some people used to think that they get the disease because of magic of certain things.
Lewis is calling for a government-sponsored nationwide campaign to educate citizens about diabetes. The United Nations says World Diabetes Day serves as a reminder for people to know the symptoms of diabetes, get tested, and get treatment. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Zimbabwe, where HIV/AIDS remains a major threat to adolescent girls and women. UNAIDS estimates there are nearly 1.5 million people in the southern African country living with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. From Borewelo, reporter Adi Kondo describes a program called Dreams that seeks to reduce the number of affected girls and women.
DREAM stands for Determined, Resilient, Empowered, AIDS-Free, Mentored and Safe. The project is a public-private partnership aimed at reducing rates of HIV among adolescent girls and young women in countries with the highest levels of the disease. In 2015, 10 countries accounted for nearly half of all HIV infections globally. They include Kenya, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, South Africa, Swaziland, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. One related group in Zimbabwe working with the initiative to raise awareness of HIV/AIDS is the Good Hope Dreams Club. The group, which is located in the Blawa suburb of Nketa 6, is making inroads into the community. Its founder, 22-year-old Rosalie Matimba, explains the club's community outreach efforts.
Today we are having HIV and AIDS awareness program through sports. We are using sporting as a model of reaching out to adolescent girls and young women in the whole of Lai province. We are bringing sexual reproductive health services to their doorsteps so that they access for free. And then we are working towards in the HIV risk reduction through this program. Then this program, we are doing it as part of one of our club activities. After getting our fund from PEFA, this is one of the initiatives that we are doing.
She says the Good Hope Dreams Club works with different partners as it moves from district to district with its enlightenment program.
We have different partners coming in. We have Population Services Zimbabwe offering family planning services. We have HF Zimbabwe and Pilo Central Hospital. We are doing HIV testing services. We have Youth Advocates Zimbabwe, youth with the youth helpline. Then also we have Young People's Network on Sexual Reproductive Health, HIV and AIDS, convened by National AIDS Council. Also we have Ministry of Sport supporting this program, the community leadership. Then we also have different teams coming from different areas, from other districts.
Many factors contribute to girls' vulnerability to HIV/AIDS, including social isolation, poverty, discriminatory cultural norms, orphanhood, gender-based violence, and inadequate schooling. The DREAMS initiative goes beyond typical health initiatives to address these factors and is working toward meeting the Sustainable Development Goal of ending AIDS by 2030. Sport is used for outreach, to identify talent, and to inform the public who come to attend athletic events. But the ultimate aim of the program is to inform adolescent girls and young women how to prevent and mitigate the disease. One of the beneficiaries of the program at a recent HIV awareness event in Makoba Township of Blawa was 25-year-old Kathy Sabata.
Yeah, I'm feeling nervous. You never get used to this, no matter how many times you do it. Just get nervous. But I think it's a good initiative, so I get to know my status and how to live after I know my status. And please make this more regular for everyone, meaning the rural areas, not just the urban areas.
The club also equips girls with self-help skills training, such as crafts training. Proceeds from the sales of their products help them to afford bus fare for school and to pursue further studies. Some of the beneficiaries who were idle are undergoing various training programs that are changing their lives. Shalom Mahlekete has been with the club since its creation in 2016.
I've learned a lot from the Dreams Club. We've learned on how to behave yourself, and also I've achieved a lot in this club. I went to do hotel and catering with Dot Youth. Then I got the opportunity to work at Rainbow Hotel, and this club has helped me to supplement my subjects from two subjects. Now I've got eight subjects. At all level.
Okay.
Which are three B's, three C's, and two A's. I dream of becoming a policewoman. I applied at the therapy and I passed those tests. Then February I'm starting my training.
The three-year-old club has managed to reach 210 girls who are divided into groups of 35. They meet two or three times depending on the schedules of their activities. With programs such as Dreams, PEPFAR officials say adolescent girls and young women can vastly improve their chances of avoiding infection. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Nyankol singing in her native Dinka about heritage. We have been listening to Nyankol with a song about heritage. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're traveling outside Juba Town where there is no VOA FM, you can still listen to us on a shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kHz, 13865 kHz, and 15180 kHz. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.